Good morning, everyone. This meeting is called to order on October 20th, 2020 at, looks like 10:19. I'd like to apologize for the late start, but it's been busy here getting everything set up and running properly. But before proceeding with any business, I believe Mr. Hollingsworth has a statement to make.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A public notice of this meeting containing all items on the proposed agenda has been filed in the Office of the Secretary of State as required by Chapter 551 Government Code, referred to as the Open Meetings Act. I would like for this fact to be noted in the official record of this meeting.
Thank you. I'm going to skip over to item number two and welcome everybody. Thanks for taking your time and making the effort to participate. This is such an important program that we have. It's so effective. I'd like to take a moment to welcome a new council member, Ms. Abby Frank. Ms. Frank is the ranch manager with Texas Farm Credit in Brenham and fills the agricultural banking position on the council. Welcome aboard. First item of business is review and approval of the minutes from September 11th, 2019. Council meeting will have they've already been distributed. And I would ask everyone, when you do speak or make a motion or a second, please state your name so that we can record that here. Thank you. Is there a motion for approval of the minutes of September 11th, 2019?
This is Tim Kleinschmidt as proxy for Commissioner Sid Miller. I so move to approve the minutes.
Thank you. Is there a second?
Got it.
Thank you.
Second.
All in favor, please say aye.
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 Is there any opposed?
Aye.
Hearing no opposition, the motion carries unanimously. Next item is the ethics review for returning and new council members. Mr. Murphy, please make your presentation. No.
Yeah. Okay, let me try one more time. Test.
Thank you.
Very good. Sorry about that. Good morning, Council members and Chairman Morian. This is James Murphy, legal counsel for the program, and I'm presenting on the open meetings law, the public information law, the administrative procedure law, and other laws relating to the conduct of public officials. I do apologize again for my technical difficulties. This presentation is the required statutory training program. Most of you have served on this council before, so you're already trained, and this presentation serves as a refresher for you. In addition, we welcome new council member Abby Frank from Brenham. And I'd also like to introduce who's on the live team today, Colette Barron-Brasby. She's our lead real estate attorney here at the department, and ultimately she will replace me and serve as legal counsel to the program going forward.
Oh, good morning, everyone. I wasn't sure if you were wanting me to speak. Thanks, James. I look forward to working with everyone.
Thanks, Colette. That filled my slide forwarding technical issues quite well, so appreciate that. looks like, all right, just move to the next slide, please. First, we're going to talk about the requirements of the Open Meetings Act. That's government, Texas Government Code Chapter 551. And to have this meeting today, it was necessary to comply with that statute. There's a video that you were informed of and a letter that was sent out, and that's a requirement for state officials to watch. There are additional resources about the open meetings law on the Attorney General's website, and some of the key points to remember are that public posting of the meeting is required in advance of a quorum of council members getting together. The council's actions are limited to what's on the posted agenda, and if that law is violated, there are some severe sanctions. Today we have just one action item for your consideration, which was approval of the minutes from the last meeting, and all the items today were properly noticed to the public. Next slide, please. Moving on to the public information law, which is sometimes called the Open Records Law, Mass. Texas Code Chapter 552. There's a recommended video online and a certificate showing completion of the video. There are other resources, just as with the Open Meetings Law, that are on the Attorney General's website. Key points to remember are that a document within the meaning of this law includes any information captured in any form, that includes electronic, recorded, and paper, and any written request for documents invokes the Public Information Act. Documents are presumed to be public information and must be disclosed to the requester within 10 business days, or the department must seek an exemption from disclosure within 10 business days of the request. The burden is on the state agency to prove there's a valid exemption from disclosure, which is determined by the Attorney General's office. These laws are enforceable by criminal and civil sanctions. TPWD's public information officers are Chris Cadis and Julian Martinez, who are in their department and your points of contact if a public information request is sent to the council. Next slide, please. The next law we're going to talk about is the administrative procedure law, which has two major components. One is the part that deals with contested case hearings where a body of state officials serve as the judicial body in a judicial capacity, and that won't happen for this council. The other component of the law governs rulemaking, and this council does have rulemaking authority. Thus far, the council has not seen the need to adopt formal rules, and staff does not have any recommendations to do that at present, but that's a possibility when needed. There are resources available on the Attorney General's website, just like the Open Meetings and Public Information Act laws. The department has developed a rule adoption checklist that lists the steps you'd have to use to adopt a set of rules. If the rules are adopted, they're put into the Texas Administrative Code, and the rules have the force of law. Next slide, please. Now we're going to talk about laws governing conduct by public officials, specifically on ethics, lobbyists, and grant making and contracting. Next slide, please. For ethics, here's a few of the most important ethics laws to be aware of. Some of the revolving door restrictions are more recent, and so I recommend that you look at those when your term on the council is nearing completion. Next slide, please. There's a training program on the Texas Ethics Commission website, which is very helpful. It's not a video, it's more of a self-paced program. The main ethics laws are in Government Code Chapter 572, and I'm going to touch on some of the key points that you'll need to be aware of as council members. An important task for each of you is you'll need to do a personal financial statement by April 30th of each year, and there are details of that and how you do that on the website of the Texas Ethics Commission. So please put that task on your to-do list for early next year. Generally speaking, conflicts of interest are prohibited. Of course, what constitutes a conflict of interest is a detailed, fact-specific analysis that I won't delve into today. The last point I wanted to touch on is a council member must not vote on or otherwise participate in a matter in which they have a conflict of interest. So if that happens, then the council member who is involved in that should note on the record and publicly recuse from a decision on that matter. Please feel free to reach out to me or Colette with any questions on this. Next slide, please. I'll touch briefly on dealing with lobbyists. I think given the nature of this council, it's unlikely you'll be dealing with lobbyists in any significant way, but there are special rules when one is a state official who deals with lobbyists, and that's Government Code Chapter 305. Gifts that are otherwise permissible under bribery laws and ethics policy might not be permissible from a registered lobbyist. There's a list of registered lobbyists available on the Texas Ethics Commission website, and even if a gift from the lobbyist is permissible, if you can't accept it, your name will appear on a lobbyist's activities report if certain thresholds are reached. So lobbyists are a special category of interaction under the ethics laws. Next slide, please. This council will issue grants to applicants, so it's important we follow all contracting and grant-making laws to prevent favoritism or the appearance of favoritism. Staff at the department will monitor and supervise the grants and contracts to make sure that the requirements are met. So the ethics provisions dealing with contracting are certainly applicable to the department when it carries out this program, and the council should be aware of them. There's a video on the controller's website for you to watch. There's additional guidance, very detailed, provided through the State of Texas Procurement Manual and Contract Management Guide. And these are tasks that the department staff in supporting the program will take responsibility for complying with. But you should know that they're out there and the department staff is going to do it. Next slide, please. I would like to touch on a few miscellaneous items that are covered in the training book. State property can only be used for state purposes. This council may be reimbursed for travel expenses, but reimbursed and it is not allowed for alcoholic beverages. And state funds cannot be used to influence the passage or defeat of legislation. Next slide, please. Not a lot to say on the policies. The council, when it was administered by the General Land Office, didn't adopt policies prior to January 1, 2016, and the council, while it protects parks and wildlife, has not adopted any since. We've included in the training materials references to a couple of helpful Ethics Commission policies, including helpful hints for filing your personal financial statement and a document about the thresholds for accepting gifts or meals from outside persons when you're doing duties as a member of the council. Next slide, please. And that's all I have today. May I answer any questions? And I'm not sure how equipped we are for that, but certainly available to answer any questions either here today during the meeting or happy to provide you my contact information to discuss any questions you may have about ethics or contracting laws after this meeting. And thank you.
All right, thank you. At this point, I think I'll back up and do a roll call just for my benefit and the record. I could read off the list I have. It would probably be the best way to do this. The Honorable Peter Lake.
Present.
Thank you. Rusty Ray is proxy for the Honorable Rex Eisen.
Yes, sir, here.
Thank you. Honorable Roel Lopez. He's absent. Thank you. Sid Miller, I believe he has a proxy.
It's Tim Kleinschmidt as proxy for Sid Miller, present.
Thank you, Tim. The Honorable Salvador Salinas, I think he also has a proxy.
Yes, sir. Darren Clark, I'm here.
Thank you. Leslie Kinsel. She's going to be late. Okay. The Honorable Natalie Cobb Kohler. Oh, she's the one running late. Okay, sorry. The Honorable Gilbert Riojas.
Yes, sir, I'm here.
Thank you. The Honorable George D. Scott.
Present.
Thank you. And new member, the Honorable Abby Frank. Ms. Frank, are you present?
Sir, okay. This is Andrea Clark with Parks and Wildlife. Ms. Frank is online, but it appears she's having a little bit of problems with her microphone.
Okay. Thank you very much. All right, with that, we'll move on to item number 4, the Texas Farm and Ranch Land Conservation Program update. Mr. Abernathy, please make your presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Next slide, please. Good morning, everybody. I hope everybody's been healthy in the during the recent past. So I wanted to talk about the program, how successful we've been, and what we want to do. This first slide is a presentation of all of the currently closed projects in the state. You can see that the majority of them occur in Central Texas, and that is basically because that's where the pressure for development is focused, and several of the land trusts are focused in Central Texas as well. We have several along the Gulf Coast areas, and we even have one out in the Chihuahuan Desert area. We're going to have an opportunity to see these properties when Mr. Bazantin discusses their highlights. Next slide, please. Thank you. So currently we have over 25,000 acres that are protected under the program, and we actually have another 3,300 acres that are in the hopper, so to speak. They're currently under development. They're currently being worked on and being closed. So by the end of 2020, maybe 2021, we're going to have 28,000 acres of protected lands through the state of Texas through this program. Next slide, please. So we've had three funding cycles to date. We are in the fourth funding cycle. So mostly my discussion will talk about the funding cycles that have occurred, and we'll talk a little bit about the ones that are in process now. But we've had three funding cycles starting in 2017. We've been able to close 15 properties, and there currently are six properties in process at this point that we're getting very close tonight. Next slide, please. So we've been very fiscally successful with this program. As you know, or maybe some of the new members don't know, we get $2 million appropriation every biennium. So we're only talking about two bienniums into the program, not counting the one that we're currently operating in. So we've, out of $4 million appropriation, we've spent $3.8 million of our money. We keep 10% of our appropriation back for internal expenses. So essentially we open up $1.8 million every biennium available for spending. Out of that, we've received $11 million in federal funding. And we've also received $6 million in match funds. So this created a 9-to-1 leverage ratio between state funds and all other funds. And that's just an incredible turnaround to me. Next slide, please. We've also achieved, so out of the properties that have been acquired and protected, there were $33 million in conservation values. Our investment per acre, incredibly low, $140 per acre of our funds and $1,300 per acre of all the other matching funds. This is our source. It says Texas A&M Natural Resource Institute. I wanted to make sure that I mention this, that the A&M Natural Resources Institute is writing a booklet, a brochure, specifically about this program. It's in draft. We've been working hand in hand with the NRI for the last few months, and this document seemed to be published. I wish Dr. Roel Lopez was here to talk more about it. He's the director of the NRI. He's absent today, but when this thing becomes available for print, I'm going to distribute it to all the has also agreed to create some brochures for me for this program for distribution, and it's going to talk about all of the conservation values, all of the leveraging, all of the impact that this program has had across the state, both financially and for the resources it's protected. Next slide, please. Oh, and that's it. I am done. So I am happy to take any questions now or at the end of the meeting.
All right. Thank you very much. If there are no questions at this point, we'll move on to the property highlights. Mr. Bezanson, please make your presentation.
Yes, sir. Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Can they hear me? Okay. All right. This is David Bezanson, Nature Conservancy. And Chairman, council members, thank you for the opportunity to talk about this program. I've been fortunate to work on several of these projects, and I think today we're highlighting three of them. And these illustrate the theme that I want to highlight is that these lands all have multiple resource values, and they accomplish many conservation goals. There are many resources that are at risk as Texas grows, working lands, natural streams and watersheds, wildlife and landscapes, and these properties illustrate all of those values. So, the first one that I'm going to talk about today, this is the Patillo Ranch, which is adjacent to the Guadalupe Mountains National Park. For those of you who have been out there to McKittrick Canyon, one of the popular attractions there, this ranch protects both sides of the entrance road into the McKittrick Canyon. This ranch was formerly owned by the prominent geologist Wallace Pratt, who sold the original land for the park. Has a cabin that he designed. It is a working ranch, cattle, and it's also important for wildlife. The elk herd, which is in the national park, spends the winter on this property. And next slide. There you go. So this kind of shows what the ranch looks like. It's lower elevation. The mountains that are in the background are in the national park. So I think the real virtue of this conservation easement is that it adds to the park and buffers it with land which will still be in production, but which will not be developed. The property is 65. Well, the property is a little bigger, but the easement covers 6,500 acres. And this is another just a vantage point looking down across the ranch into the park. All right. So I guess moving on to the next property. Next slide. So this is the Krause Ranch, which is a hill country property. What you're looking at here on the map, Lost Maples, is down in the lower right corner. So that kind of gives you an idea of where this is located. It's the really rough country on the Balcones Escarpment, south side of the hill country in Real County. And the ranch is on the upper Frio River. And the next slide show some of the features on this ranch. This is also a working ranch. Mr. Krause has his own cattle, but this is a remarkably scenic ranch. And the landowner, Mr. Krause, bought it. It was his lifetime dream to conserve it. And thanks to this program and the NRCS Agricultural Land Easement Program, which we leveraged, he was able to fulfill that dream. You know, so one of the really remarkable things that this ranch does have a considerable distance of the Frio River itself, which is live water and very rare thing out there in the Western Hill Country. But it also has some really remarkable spring features. And so the landowners cleared a lot of the cedar on this ranch in managing it. And a lot of these springs flow where they didn't flow before. And so, this ranch has a lot of virtues for the watershed downstream, the upper Frio. Next slide. And that's the Frio. That's the low water crossing on the ranch. And I just can't say enough about how beautiful this landscape is in the upper Frio watershed. And Mr. Krause is very excited about getting the easement done. And he's interested in kind of going on the road and talking to people about other people about doing in his neighbors about doing the same thing. And then the third, one more slide. This shows some sinkhole features on his property. And then the third property that I want to talk about is the Honey Creek Spring Ranch. This is also hill country and again has some of the same kind of watershed values. You can see on the map, kind of, it's a little hard to see, but the yellow or orange is this ranch. Guadalupe River State Park is on the north side, and Honey Creek State Natural Area to the east. And that was a property that was acquired by the department with Nature Conservancy participation a few decades ago. And this property will complement those conservation lands. This ranch has been in one family ownership for its entire history, since roughly 1860. It has a one-room chapel, which dates to the 19th century. And so the family is very conservation-minded. They're very proud of owning this remarkable place, unique place, and they are selling the easement for roughly half price using this program and, again, the NRCS ALE. And the next slide will show kind of some of the remarkable things about this ranch. This ranch protects a big part of the largest cave in the state of Texas. It's more than 20 miles long, and it's a river cave, an underground river. You can see that in the pictures. And the river is a contributor to the Guadalupe River, as well as to the state park, which I'll show you a picture of that in a minute. And it really underscores the importance of watershed protection, which is something that these easements do. Guadalupe River at that point is just upstream of Canyon Lake, which is a water supply lake for about 30,000 people. And this is an area where land prices are approaching $20,000 an acre or more, and wildlife and other land uses can't compete. Farms and ranches can't compete with that those development prices. And so that makes this easement all the more valuable, and what the family is willing to do, especially important. And next slide. This is Honey Creek Spring, which is, this is looking into the state natural area, and this is kind of the feature which the state natural area was designed to conserve. But the actual spring is on this ranch, and I think the next slide. Yes, that is Honey Creek Spring, and this is, that's, of course, doesn't look like that all the time. This is in flood, but that shows you how much water is moving through that 20 miles of cave and underground passages, coming out into the stream and flowing into the Guadalupe and down into Canyon Lake. So, you know, this watershed is extremely important. This is, of course, also a working ranch, and I want to emphasize that these are all working lands, which we're losing rapidly at a very concerning rate as Texas urbanizes, along with wildlife habitat and watersheds. And these easements are beneficial for all those things. And I appreciate the chance to work on these projects, and we're very, very grateful for this program and the role that it plays in land conservation in Texas. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Extraordinary pictures. I don't remember seeing those when we presented the Honey Creek.
Mr. Chairman, I hope I gave those to you. I really think I did. It's been a year. I'm really glad that David was here. I wanted to say something about Honey Creek. You know, I was part of the review team, so was Ted. We had experts from all over the agency that looked at our applications. I wanted the council to understand that Honey Creek checked all the boxes. It was unanimously the number one. There wasn't a single thing about Honey Creek that we didn't like. It has water features. It has karst species. It has caves. It has water, you know, springs. It has cattle. It has adjacency to open land. I mean, it really, really is a special property.
Yeah, it's just extraordinary.
It is.
Okay, well, thank you very much for the update. I guess the next item is a discussion of program application calendar for 2021. And again, Mr. Abernathy, please make your presentation.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So this is just one slide. This is just an update for our council members to understand what will be happening. And as a reminder for all our council members and for our new council member, as I said, we get funded every biennium, which, you know, the biennium begins in September 21, and this year we begin the process for applications early in that year because there's a lot to do with those properties. I will send out basically a request for applications. It will last for 60 days from March 1st until April 30th. This is exactly what we did last year, and it was plenty of time for the land trust to get their applications in. For about 2 months, and TPWD staff, typically we have wildlife biologists or botanists or some person that has a special expertise across the state, tries to visit each of these properties to verify that they have the resources that we want to protect, to verify that it's something that would come into the program, and just also just put boots on the ground and to see these properties and to talk to the landowners. After that is done and that information is provided back to me, and which I provide to the ranking selection committee, somewhere in July, I will create a day that all the internal experts will gather, and we will review each of the applications. We'll discuss all their attributes, all their pros, a numeric value to each of the criteria that we have, and we will come up with the highest ranking score. Typically what we do is we try to fund each project until we essentially run out of money. So it's kind of this running total of how much they've asked for, how much money do we have, and as we approach our full appropriation of about $1.8 million, then those properties will be funded if, to the extent possible, and then anything left over, we will see what we can do. But we try to fund as many as possible. September 2021 or October, it can be either September or October, but next fall, pretty much a year from now, we will have another council meeting, and we will review and present all of our recommendations and all of the applications, and it will be the council's prerogative to vote to fund those or not. Once the council gives us authority to fund those projects, then the Land Conservation Office, the Farm Ranch Office, will begin to draft and execute those agreements with the Land Trust. It's essentially, it's a grant agreement. It also is a contract for professional services where the Land Trust provides due diligence, project management, and basically they escort the Land Trust and the owner through the process and get us a signed conservation easement on the other side. And Mr. Chairman, that is all I have.
And I'll take this opportunity to say we're going to try to set the September date or the potential October date as soon as we can, get
yes,
everybody's
sir.
Input and availability so we have it on the calendar early.
Yes, sir.
Well, thank you very much. And this is sort of unique to be meeting visually, partially. I feel like most of these meetings, give and take is inhibited, but I will make a couple of comments. I'm waiting for, I'm anxious to see the A&M report because from the very beginning, these fellow council members have talked about getting the message out. So we've done some of it effectively, obviously, but the more the better.
Mr. Chairman, I think you will be more than happy with what A&M produces. I've been involved in the draft for several months. It is very close. It has pictures that we provided very similar to what you saw this morning, but it did an in-depth dive into the finances and the statistical analysis of what our money is providing this program.
Thank you. Well, yeah, it's just an extraordinary program, and all we need is more money.
Yes, sir.
With that, I'll go on to, I guess now is the time for ask for any public comments. Do we have anybody signed up? No one signed up to speak. Well, then I'll open it up to fellow council members. Any comments, suggestions, ideas? We welcome your input.
Mr. Chairman, Rusty Ray for Rex Eisen with the State Soil and Water Conservation Board.
Yes, sir.
I think last meeting, Ms. Parker reiterated Mr. Eisen's appreciation for including a industry representative in the review process of the grants. I spoke with Mr. Jay Evans, who helped out last year. Mr. Evans is with the Texas and Southwestern Cattle Raisers Association. He let me know that he would be interested in participating again this next funding cycle if that was an option.
Mr. Chairman, we would love to have Jay back with us. He was an awesome addition to the selection team. He fit in perfectly. We didn't skip a beat with him, and he had a lot of insight to provide. We would love to have him back.
Yes, I think it was a great addition and valuable expertise. So, yes, we'll get in touch with Mr. Evans, or you can pass the word along to him that we will be in touch and welcome his participation.
I will. Thank you.
Any other comments? Well, with that, I think I'll just say thank you for participating. I wish you could see it from this side. It's been a beehive of activity with people juggling trying to make this all work, and it's effective to a point, and thank you for your participation. Hopefully next September it's all in person, I hope. So with that, any other comments or suggestions, then this is a record. I'll say the council has completed its business, and I declare us adjourned at 10:53, it looks like.